In the latest episode of No Big Deal, you're going to listen to how Ollie meticulously prepares for his meetings and opportunities he has. And he's going to prove to you the detail it takes to really sell one of your first ever mega deals. We're going to learn how to manage internal stakeholders for alignment to ensure success, and also how to ensure you can really detach yourself from the end result or the commission that you might expect. Looking forward to sharing with you. Cue the intro.
Let me talk you through the two most emotional, stressful months of my sales career.
It's no big deal to call a CTO and tell I want to talk.
You cannot stand on the sideline and basically wait until the dice rolls itself. It's never gonna happen.
I don't know if this is gonna be on the record or off the record. It's almost like playing with cards, this job. Like, it's like you get given a hand of cards and like you have to do the best with what you have.
Someone might have been watching down on me.
Me and Jack going into this, when he originally told me exactly the same, like, oh, you know, Jack, I've got this idea, you know, what about this? My first thought was, my God, I don't even care if anyone, like, listens to this, you know. If I take one key takeaway from every recording, I'll be such a better rep.
This is No Big Deal, the sales podcast.
Hello, and welcome back to No Big Deal, Series 3. And we are very excited to have Oliver Jackson from Smart Recruiters on the episode today. Now, Ollie has been at Smart Recruiters for 6 years. He's moved from SDR to commercial, to mid-market, to enterprise, to large enterprise. He's completed them all. He's become global number one. He's hit 3 consecutive president's clubs when his company had them. And he's never missed the target. So thanks so much for coming, Ollie. I'm sure we're going to learn a lot from you today.
Thanks so much for having me. Quite the introduction. So,
a lot
to live up to.
As ever. Ollie, I've got a question, because you told us this I'm just going to get straight into the deal, mate. You told us this when we spoke the last time around. You said, super confident about this deal, because you couldn't imagine that anybody had done more work than you on the deal, which I think is probably the cornerstone of any big deal, is like, you just got to lean into it really hard. But what I want to ask you is, like, when the deal started, when you're preparing for the deal, can you just give us some insight into what you did, what it took to get this deal moving so that you were in a position to be competitive in the deal?
I think when I come into a deal, like, there's two elements, right? There's the strategy around how we're going to approach the deal, but also the execution, I think, is key. And they are different. So I'll give you an example of that. If you're looking at the first call, maybe we know the opportunities come about. We are expecting an RFP from this account. We're immediately going to start account mapping. And again, if I think I'm about working harder than the competition, I'm talking going beyond just what are the connections that we have, like the mutual connections on LinkedIn with this company. We're looking at what's the partner landscape maybe? What technology are the stakeholders that I'm going to be meeting, and the stakeholders that I'm also not going to be meeting but maybe influencing? What's their experience and exposure to my technology and also the technology of my competitors? In the big deals, a lot of the times they will have go-to consultancy partners or delivery partners. Who are they? Because that probably dictates who's in the RFP as well with me. And also what advice they're getting, especially the larger consultancies will be in bed with certain vendors to an extent, certainly greater than they are with a smaller vendor like Smart Recruiters. I need to prepare by understanding what's happening at the business. Obvious one, again, we go to the annual report, but are we looking at the news? Are we understanding from the stakeholder mapping exercise we've done what the people at the business are talking about? For me, a great buyer is going on a transformation journey, usually around digital transformation, usually around experience. So if they're doing something from a consumer perspective and they're changing that experience, maybe they're looking at candidate perspective in a similar light. So all of these things kind of start to build a picture of, I guess, who I'm going to be talking to and how I'm going to approach them, what strategies we might employ.
And where are you keeping all that? How do you log all this information?
So we go to Slack internally, and we use Google. I overshare and collaborate in Slack. So one of the things we want to bring in is, once we understand that there's a product fit, going back to that strategy, it's not just about the product fitting from a functional perspective, but it's also how we're going to position it, and looking at the business mapping exercise, what value our product can bring them. We're then going to start bringing in internal stakeholders. So from my perspective, that's solution consulting, that's solutions architecture, it might be executive leadership, and we might be bringing in our peers in product and our peers in customer success as well. And I need to align the team. So, I'm trialing Notion at the moment. I don't know if you're familiar with it or have used it, but Slack for me is a one-stop shop where I will overshare everything I've learned about the business, every action that needs to take place around this deal. And also, once I've mapped the internal stakeholders and we've brought everybody into the channel, we can start assigning actions where relevant as well, and start, I guess, the large enterprise sales is a project management exercise. So I guess we kick off the project management aspect of the deal.
I've got a quick question, right? You've downed tools on pretty much all other stuff that's going on in your life if you're going to do that much work on a deal. And a lot of salespeople are distracted by loads of other shit that they've got going on, whether it's be small run rate deals, whether it be like internal politics and gossip, whether it just be like their outside like work-life balance and like hobbies and stuff. I'm assuming you've still got all those things. But to what extent does your life have to become pretty much invested, like 80% of it invested into this deal if you think you're going to be successful in it? I guess that question was a bit of a roundabout the way, but I think you get what I'm getting at.
Yeah, I think it's all consuming.
Right? Yeah.
So if we take last year, for example, or years before as well, like I might have like 5 potential opportunities. I've got 3 that we're actively in. I've got 1 that's kind of the all in. And then you want to definitely win 1. We're going to fight for a 2nd. And the 3rd is not our strongest of placements there. That's very different. If when I was in mid-market, there's a lot more volume, commercial, exactly the same. It kind of, the bigger deals, you taper down the number you do, right? But you do have to be all in. Like at the end of a big deal, I feel like I know the business as well as the stakeholders that we're selling to, and that is exactly how it should be. Also, it means that I can then pass on that information to my internal team, and that ensures that they're successful through the implementation and ongoing process as well. But I think, yeah, in short, you're all in. What I would say is, in the last 6 months, everything I've just mentioned has become infinitely quicker to do, and that's purely down to AI. Now, I wouldn't go in and necessarily ask ChatGPT and trust everything it comes out with, but for example, with tools like Perplexity, yeah, I can ask it to cite where this information has come from. I mean, you can do it in GPT now, but originally you couldn't. So, and I can cite that report, and I know that information is genuine. And what I'm doing actually is just reducing the number of clicks I'm going to be doing through Google. And I can ask it for specific years. I can take that report, I can put it into another model, and I can ask it to analyze what it's got. I can relate that to my business. It's become infinitely easier. What I would say is, it's like that engineering phrase, I think it's like garbage in, garbage out, or there's some other acronyms and words that you might use. I have a skill set, I think, that allows me to articulate correctly what I'm looking for and understand if it's returned the correct information. And there is a big difference between somebody that doesn't have the foundational knowledge putting their request into these AI tools and not understanding necessarily what they're getting back. But what it does do is, from an account mapping perspective, from a business mapping perspective, I think it almost halves the time it takes to do this research. So if you're looking at how can I apply this when I'm running at 30 deals instead of 3, leverage the tech that's out there to do some of this heavy lifting for you. I genuinely haven't found any tool that does it better than me going through it manually, but you're right, it's an incredibly time-consuming process. I'm mapping an account at the moment. We've got a large RFP, global business, everybody knows them. And I think the mapping exercise alone took me probably 2.5 days of like, I'm solidly in it. I want to understand everything about every person that I might influence in this business. And also, I'm mapping people that will be end users that might not be even involved in the process, because I kind of want to know what they're saying. Like, if I'm selling recruitment software to recruiters and I've seen three of their recruiters have left businesses that use my technology, it's highly likely at this organization, they're not going to be involved in this tender at any material level. They might be involved in one workshop at some point in an 18-month period. If I know they've come and they're familiar with my technology, then I need to understand if they were happy, and that influences the deal. And I think it's the little elements that actually all add up in these big deals. And again, it's something that I can control as well. I can do that research. I can find out where they were. I can find out if they've used this before, and I can find out if they were happy on the platform. What I can't control is their five other colleagues that I know nothing about.
With this specific deal in mind, Ollie, if we were to take it back, like, you were up against it. It's a very well-known retail brand that probably most people have shopped at before, we won't say names. And, you know, the easy option for this business is actually to buy one of the more traditional software vendors rather than go with the sort of like newish kids on the block, the smaller guys. Was there anything specifically that you did on this big transformational opportunity when you were preparing that you now continue on to pretty much every opportunity?
So it wasn't, I didn't start doing this, but it was certainly really effective in this particular opportunity, and since has been foundational in everything I've done since. But being able to get more creative with tools like Canva rather than using something like Adobe is massive. If you're trying to personalize your approach and co-brand things, and clearly what it allows you to do in both a visual aspect but also from a video editing aspect is you can create content that resonates with the buyer. From a simple perspective of being aligned with this particular brand and all subsequent opportunities I work with, there's very little of my branding and it's all in their branding. Because when they take that information and disseminate it through the organization, people that may not be right on top of the project get this company branded deck with all this information about my business and are like, well, it looks all right, sign off, whatever. Obviously, there's more due diligence, but subconsciously, people are seeing familiarity. So I love using Canva, and I think that it's really made some aspects a lot easier. Also, you need to clearly articulate your value, and especially when you're competing against larger organizations. In my market, that's HCM Suites, that recruitment is a tiny proportion of their overall product offering and one that they can discount down to nothing, essentially. So I'm competing against free. I've just finished Amp It Up by Frank Slootman, the CEO of Data Domain ServiceNow Snow. And every company that he was at, he was always competing against free. Big players, EMC, Dell, obviously then they merged as well, but Microsoft, Oracles, etc. So you have to clearly present value, because your competitor is saying, well, it doesn't cost anything to move with us. Again, going back to being creative, one of the ways that I like to do that is if we talk about efficiency, a lot of organizations struggle with the concept of putting a value on efficiency. It's an intangible, right? It's not as black and white as sales revenue or speed of the sales process, and where there's not a dollar value assigned. But if I record a video of what this process is going to look like in my software at your organization, and I ask you to do exactly the same, record yourself doing this process now using your current technology. And then we say, well, that was a 5-minute video you sent me, and I sent you a 43-second video. And then we do the maths on the efficiency, and it's clearly demonstrable to anybody that's looking in on this process and trying to understand, why are we doing this? Like, what is the gain that we're making? Well, we're going to make 5x improvement here, and I've just shown you it. Look at these two videos. This is what we're doing today, and this is what we're doing, hopefully, in the future.
Do you show those two videos in the presentation?
Sometimes.
That's a fucking long 5 minutes, isn't it? You're like,
I think it's awkward. And I think also that, but the other thing to manage is that's your stakeholder management, right? You've got at this point, probably a champion, probably a number of people that are invested in you as the potential vendor. But the reality is the actual, if we talk about like economic buyer, they're not in all of these meetings. They probably don't understand why we're doing it. Whereas when you present kind of black and white evidence, when you present something like that, it's powerful, to be honest. It moves the needle.
You can put a dollar amount on it because you can do time saved for salary.
So. Yeah, exactly. To go back to video, and this actually comes more from partnerships internally with my solution consultant at the moment, especially, is fantastic at bringing these crazy, wacky visions we have to life through video. But we will... retailers are readily available and they all have their doors open, right? So go and interview people, or go and we've recorded videos of us walking through stores, interacting with their business as a customer, but then placing how we would see recruitment happen at a store level. And I'm the actor that's applying for a job, and then we're the hiring manager. And it's not necessarily like a, here's my opinion, kind of conflicting, hold on a minute, breath hold moment in a meeting. But what I do is I always send these videos before the meeting. So I'm like, well, I've been in your store and this is what we're doing. And also this is where we see the future. And I've done that with retailers in hospitality. I've been shopping, I've had coffees, I've been on flights, I've done all, like, because it shows a massive amount of awareness for the brand as well. Fortunately, I guess where I am selling predominantly now, a lot of them are actually brands that I interact with quite regularly. Anyway, because of the size and because of the way that the world works, right? If you're leaving the UK and you're going on a train, you're probably only going to go on one. If you're on a plane, you've got one of five options. Like that I interact with them, right? So I do have genuine experience.
And talking of composition and the option of free, tell us about how that manifested in this deal.
Fairly early on, so they were the solution that they were using. I also don't know for a fact that it was free. I just know. I think that's a good thing. As aware as you are of your prospective buyer, good AEs are very aware of the competitive market and the landscape, and that's, well, each to their own. But from my opinion, sell with consultatively, honesty, integrity. Don't go in and be like, this other vendor is whatever and does that. I don't talk about other vendors. In fact, if I do, I only talk positively about them. But what I will do is have an awareness of where their product is stronger than my product, and also align that with what my prospective buyer's priorities are. And again, that goes into qualification. Now, with a product that's free, evidently there is a question mark around the value that they can deliver. And the reality is this product has a very comprehensive suite. Here I'm basically doing it now, right? This is the talk track. But it's an incredibly comprehensive suite, and it's a very good tool for a business to adopt. But there are certain aspects where best-in-class technologies are utilized more commonly by their customers instead of their all-in-one suite. And that's because that customer's priority is a recruitment experience that can do this, or a learning experience that has this, and they can't meet that demand. So then you're having a question of, like, how do we de-risk this move for you? Because you're obviously, from an IT perspective, thinking, well, I've got one technology and it's all consolidated and it's lovely. And now you're asking me to take a risk and pay for that risk as well, because I've got to invest in you. And what's the return of that? And that's where it comes to, well, from an experience perspective, here's the videos that we've demonstrated. Here's the efficiencies we think you can gain. And from your perspective, when you're concerned about maybe IT architecture and infrastructure and integration, here's how I can de-risk that for you. And that's manage every stakeholder along the journey. Understand where your product fits, understand where your competitors fit, and understand what your buyer wants.
I've always liked that approach because it allows you to not only frame yourself as unique, but it also allows you to gain bags of credibility.
100%. And also, we're not unique. That's the thing. Like, if one was the best, everyone would use it.
Yeah.
I mean, so here's an example outside of the sector, but AWS had at one point about 75% market share. Google Cloud's growing about 20%, and they're taking that market share back. The reason AWS and Microsoft Azure dominated the market was because they're the best. But then when competition comes, and they're not the best anymore. Mm. And the market that I sell in is an incredibly crowded marketplace. And there are right tools for right jobs. There's a lot to be said if people have used systems before, right? They trust that it can deliver what their vision is. So they don't necessarily need to go and do something crazy, new and exciting if they've confident that they can get the experience that they want. And that's not to say that we're not crazy, new and exciting. I think we do some cool things. But especially when a lot of vendors will move from the bottom up and in from the mid-market perspective and then scale into enterprise. At enterprise, that's quite intimidating. Do we go for the brand new technology that's promising us to sit on our roadmap and join this vision with us? Or do we go for a more mature technology and a safer pair of hands at this point in our business growth? And again, right buyer, right fit, right product. You just have to understand that.
I've got a question. In this situation, like, we all know the more senior your access, the more influence you can have. If you've got alignment of the most senior person in the business, say, for example, or someone with the most swing internally. So in this one, I'm assuming you had some of that at some point. How did you do that? I mean, and this is advice for me and Jack and anyone who's listening. Like, how do you speak that language? What did you do to engage in a way that the senior stakeholders like to engage? How did you maintain that level of communication in a way that came across credible, authentic, diligent, and maintained sort of like deal momentum?
So I think, how do you talk to them? I don't think there's you talk to them exactly the same. I think that's the most surprising thing. I think before I started speaking to a lot of senior executives, I was quite nervous about speaking to senior executives because they're senior, but then they're actually just normal people that have a job to do and a priority list that's just slightly different to yours. But you need to value their time, and you need to value what they're saying and what is driving their decision making process. And also, I wouldn't, in terms of valuing their time, I've never I would never out of the blue email somebody at a C-level. I would never cold call them at the size of organization that I'm working with. For mid-market and maybe even commercial organizations, if there's some exposure, I might do that. But I need to be introduced. I think there's a kind of follow proper channels to a certain extent. Once the dialogue's open, then I can do it. But everything I need to send to that individual has to add value. Everything needs to be concise. The analogy that I always use is, why the fuck do I care? That's in when we demo a product, when I'm sending an email, anything I say, I need to get on the other side of the table and I need to think, why the fuck do I care? Like, what have you just said? And what is the value that I can get from that? And this is another really old kind of bit of advice, but I always go with the kind of, can you read it on a mobile phone? And especially for an executive. So for my stakeholders, as long as I know that they're bought in to read what I'm sending them, because again, it adds value. Why the fuck do I care? I will send long emails, lots of content. Here's some links. Here's maybe a buyer's site that you can utilize, which has got everything indexed for you. But for an executive, here's what you asked me. Here's the response. There's the value for you. More questions. Cool. How can we help, etc. Or loop in somebody else that's going to help support that. So usually, and it's not like their assistant, it's more like, who's the PM that has asked me to present this to this individual, but is actually going to own the response coming back for me.
So something I've really liked, Ollie, you talked about when we were speaking about this deal before, and it goes back to the preparation and having these like big face-to-face meetings, is how you prepared all of your internal stakeholders with the script of the meeting, and you practiced that script. You had a seating plan, you had questions your internal stakeholders needed to ask. And when you were talking to me, like to me and Jack about that, and I know Jack does that, and I've done that in a recent deal, I was like, that meticulous level of detail is like outrageous.
I think it's important to put into perspective, though, for those that are listening that are in different segments, like this big deal is like my annual number. So if you think about, and I will go into kind of that process because it is a bit meticulous, as you said. But if you think about the work that you put into your year closing 30 deals, I'm putting in that amount of work in a very focused effort on a deal. That said, I do go in quite deep. So I do. I think the other thing that's really important is from that point of this is my focal point and this is my opportunity that I own and am project managing and is my sole focus. That doesn't mean that it's the sole focus for everybody else in my business. That doesn't mean that even within the deal team, from a solutions architect and a solutions consultant, that they haven't been on 5, 6, 7 different calls with different AEs. And if you think how difficult it is to remember every detail in your 1, 5, 10 deals that you're managing, now multiply that by all of the stakeholders that you've got involved. So in order for people to show up as best as they can, I want to enable that, basically. That's my job. And for me, that comes down to preparing them as much as possible. So as you said, some most face-to-face meetings I will have, even if we were doing casual, if it's a casual setting or if it's a formal setting, I'll make sure that everybody knows the objective of the meeting, the agenda of the meeting. I'll make sure that everybody knows what we want to get out of that meeting. And also, when we talk about multi-threading and stakeholder alignment, I'll ensure that everybody is briefed individually on what they might be saying in that meeting. To your point, I script it purely so that they can almost hear me say it. And I caveat that with, because by the way, it might be my CEO that is getting a script from me. It's certainly been my head of EMEA customer success. It's certainly been my global sales leader. Like, so I'm scripting it as I'm writing this all out so that you can hear me say it. This isn't your language. This isn't the way that you speak. If you don't have time to kind of put this into how you want to articulate it, what I've put down hits all the right notes for the room from your persona, as it were. But please carve it out, change it as much as you want, make it your own. This is just what we're trying to get across. To your point about seating plans, like sometimes that happens organically. Sometimes it is a bit more prescribed. I've been for kind of formal dinners where I can plan a seating plan. And I'm putting people together so that they can share the value that they're going to bring to that person. So if we think about that super easy from like a technology perspective, if I've got someone in the team that is particularly technology inclined or tech inclined and more technical individual, I'll put those two together on either side. If we're coming close to what the future is going to look like, if they are a customer, ultimately the most senior buyer who's probably got the most risk on this purchase, as well as is going to reap the rewards of it going well, let's sit them next to customer success so they can understand how our customers are doing at the moment. I almost become the least important person in the room. I was talking to someone the other day and they actually, and I love it, but they use the analogy of sales is just contracts and chocolate hobnobs. So basically, when he explained it, I was like, does make sense. But it's exactly what I said. I prepped the room and I've kind of given people things we're going to talk about, what I'd like to get out of that meeting. But essentially, I walk in the room, I put some chocolate hobnobs on the table and I let everybody talk. And at the end of it, we go, we're good. And then I get out of the contract.
Yeah. Do you know what? If I'm on the buying side of this, I'm actually really fucking grateful that you've gone to this much effort to connect me with the right person. There's a crowd. I don't want to speak to a crowd. I don't want a crowd speaking to me. And if there's 100 different bits of information that I can get, I don't want 100. I just want the ones that are most important. So to know that before this meeting's gone ahead, you've sat me next to the one person who speaks my language. You've got the person who's sitting on the opposite side of the table to me to just talk to me about what I care about. and you've organized it in a way that flows so that I can switch off for 10 minutes and then switch on in 10 minutes when it is important to me. Right. From a buyer, it benefits you to do this as a seller, obviously, because you get the most value out of the small window of time you've got. But from a buyer, I'm also really fucking grateful.
Yeah. Modern selling, and I sound like I know loads and I've only been doing it a few years, but I genuinely believe in the 5 years I've been enterprise selling, it's changed. You're not selling to people, you're helping them buy.
Mm.
And by helping them buy is exactly your point. Is like aligning the right people with the company that they're investing in. Significant amount of money goes into these opportunities, and that's before they even sign. Like, this particular retailer engaged the big consultancies, as I've mentioned before. They've then got help on the delivery of the project on their side. They've got our side. They've got our contract fees. They've got the contract fees of the incumbent. They've got the data transfers. They've got, it's a huge project. And then also, they're all the fees before we add in the human cost. Like, someone's got to do this project. So they've probably got a close-knit team of 30 people doing it. And then you've got everybody else that asks for help and needs that. You've got the impact to the business and how we time it so that it cannot impact business, because they've got graduate programs or they've got new locations opening where they need to run hiring workshops and they want to use the technology. Is it going to be ready in time? Like, so if I can align the right people to talk about the right things that are the concerns for each of those individuals, that helps them buy, I think.
I've got a question. Your process is very diligent, it's very thorough. You're obviously a very patient guy. Your management, you've learned to look fucking patient.
Yeah.
Your management must have like done a good job of like empowering you to feel that you've got time. You've earned that as well, probably over years of performance, but your management have also empowered you. Is that true?
I don't know if they've empowered me. Well, I think they've empowered me, but I think it's the wrong word. I think they've trusted me.
Yeah, that's probably a better word. Yeah.
I think I'm empowered to do that. But I think it's because of trust.
Yeah.
And that's great, right? That is great. That comes because I am a tenured rep within the business with a track record of performance. I don't think you can walk into a new organization and have the same level of trust because you haven't executed like I have previously to build that trust. But yeah, absolutely. The other thing that I think is particularly changed, and if I'm honest, was like, okay, I get enterprise sales a little bit more, was disassociation. So you need to, or personally, I think, and I've found myself be better at selling when I disassociate myself from the sales process and look at it purely analytically. I call it positive paranoia, which I nicked from my boss, but I basically just be paranoid about everything that's going on. The main thing to disassociate as the deals get bigger is the financial impact that it has on you. And I only managed to do that effectively, like properly. I was like, I actually get it, like last year. Because before, I would want a deal because I'm like, I knew the value of it. Whereas when the deal got so big that if I thought about the value of it, it was like almost scary. And then being able to disassociate yourself from that and the emotion attached to that made me better at operating. And I've used that moving forward since.
Yeah, I think that's really good.
And advice. I think also for your perspective, Jack, coming into a new job as well, it's like if you want to get on the board, you want to do stuff immediately, but if you disassociate yourself from it, follow the process, know that you like back yourself and know that you've got the skill set to perform, you actually probably perform better than if you're like scampering around trying to make it happen, right? And I'm not perfect at it by a long shot, but it was a turning point for me. Was like, I have got a lot better at that.
Yeah.
And I was feedback that I got from my internal peers were like, you owned it more, you had a calmer presence, and it made people more effective.
100%. And also, people it doesn't just make people more effective, but it brings that level of calm to everybody else in the room as well. And they're like, okay, cool. Well, he's not stressed, then I'm not stressed.
100%. And that comes into prep as well. Like, the more you prep, the better you are. One of the prep questions that I actually have as well, if you're showing product, one of my favorite questions to ask, especially when you've seen a lot of product, they're seeing four or five vendors, is always asking, like, so you've seen four or five vendors now, and as I said, we don't do everything. But is there anything in particular that you saw in another vendor that you really liked? Like, and that probably gets more feedback than what you don't like, and that probably gets more. But also, I would say at least 60% of the time, we would probably do that. We just haven't.
Yeah, 100%.
So more times than not, it's actually going to move the needle further in my direction. If they already like it, but they didn't see this, and then I can show them that, added bonus.
Yeah, me and Jack grew up on the hard streets of selling sales off an outreach. And I was fiercely competitive for a long period of time, and the products were so similar. And that, sometimes you get to the end of the deal cycle, and they'll be like, are we going to go outreach because they do call recording? And you're like, we do call recording. I'm an idiot. I never showed them call recording. Sorry, I've rambled on a lot.
People, though, right? That's also like the very, very true mantra. So, and that comes down to trust as well.
The one thing I wanted to finish on, Ollie, was something like the career highlight of yours was like on this deal, right? Like your favorite sales memory of I'll just call it like the pitch of the product and the dinner. Talk to us about that and why it was like your favorite sales memory.
It was just such a enjoyable day. So we hadn't signed any paperwork, but we were kind of in the final elements of contracting. And this business wanted to know, like, where do we go from here? What are we going to do? And we had the idea to bring together the executives on their side and on our side. And we would do a mid late afternoon kind of presentation in a boardroom and do all that kind of stuff. But then we're going to go out and have dinner, because for them, I think at this point, they were probably 2.5 years into it. And for us, we'd been engaged on and off for 18 months, probably all in for 11 months. And we'd achieved a lot, right? We'd fully validated the solution's going to work for the business. We'd mapped out how that's going to look. We knew the implementation journey. We knew key milestones. And like, there was genuine excitement. And it was a bit nerve-wracking, obviously, standing in front of a boardroom and being like, hey, I'm Ollie and I'm here to tell you about your future. But it was a genuinely like really warm day. And then to just go out and like break bread, I guess, is afterwards and have like a nice meal. He wasn't massively fancy. It was just like, it was a nice restaurant. We had a little private room and had a meal, had some wine, and just like got to know each other before we started the hard work. Because it comes in stages, right? But the real hard work starts when the sale's done and we start implementing the system across their business. And to meet and align as a team, not only cemented the end of the sales process, but really kicked off the implementation process really nicely. And I hadn't done that before until that point. And that was really, really cool.
Oh, nice.
I also really love the framing of that as well, where you can say to the customer, like, we want to meet to get to know each other before the hard work starts. Because most salespeople are really disingenuous at that point, and they're like, oh, thanks for getting this done. And the customer's like, getting it done?
Yeah.
It started. And you're like,
right, you signed.
Yeah, you've exposed. Yeah.
I do think that's it is hard though. Like, I obviously been with the business a long time. I've got a lot of customers and I get quite a lot of repeat business inquiries and business in general from ex-customers. But it is difficult to balance that element of the job. Like, I wish I had stronger relationships with customers that I'd signed, but you have to remember that's what customer success is there for. And I am still there, but if I actually held the level of relationship with all of the people I've ever sold to, I wouldn't be able to do my job because I'd constantly be catching up with everybody. But it is something that there is a balance. And again, one of the things that I guess I'm working on is how do I keep those relationships going a little bit? The odd text here, the email check-in, the DM on LinkedIn because I saw that they did something cool. Right, that's quite nice, I think, because I genuinely spent a lot of my life with these people, right? Yeah. 6, 9, 10, 12 months of like, yeah.
Ollie, thank you, mate. This has been extremely insightful. I didn't even ask half the questions that I've written down on this piece of paper, but I found it was super valuable. You're super smart guy, very thorough. You're really thorough, sort of sticks out to me. You're very, very thorough, which at the level that you're playing the game, that's how you need to be.
I think positive paranoia.
Positive paranoia. I like that phrase as well. I like that phrase too. I never read an email. Even if it says, great, can't wait. Looking forward to
what do you think?
Yeah, I'm like, let me just work out where it is in there. Yeah, exactly. Right, hopefully you enjoyed that. I know I did. So what we're hoping you took out of that is just the amount of detail it takes to close a big deal like this, the amount of detail it takes to communicate externally and organize and arrange the scenarios that you want your buyers to experience. Also, the amount of detail it takes for the internal communications, how to communicate upwards, downwards, via video, via Slack, via email, to make sure that you're covering every base. And also that when you're speaking to people internally and giving them the instructions you need, you're doing it in a way that comes across authentic and genuine and makes you feel as though, you know, you're not telling people what to do, but you're helping them to get the goal that they want to achieve. And finally, detachment, how to detach yourself from the outcome. Now, I know Ollie said that it's not something that he's perfect at, but he sounds pretty stoic when it comes to the outcomes. And I feel as though, you know, we all know that that's what makes a buyer feel more confident in you, feel more secure in your presence. And hopefully you picked up on some of that today. So, yeah. Hope you enjoyed it. See you next time.